Uman,
the person.
Acharyavan,
completely.
Surrendered to the spiritual master. Jnana, knowledge. Viraga, detachment. Aranghasa, by the force of. Dahati, burns. Avhiryam, impotent. Hridayam, within the heart. Jivakosham, the covering of the spirit soul. Pancha Atmakam, five elements. Yoni, source of birth. Iva, like. Utitaha, emanating. Agnihi, fire. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Upon becoming fixed in His attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the grace of the spiritual master, and by awakening knowledge and detachment, the living entity, situated within the heart of the body and covered by the five elements, burns up his material surroundings exactly as fire arising from wood burns the wood itself. I can repeat. Upon becoming fixed in his attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the grace of the spiritual master, and by awakening knowledge and detachment, the living entity situated within the heart of the body, and covered by the five elements, burns up his material surroundings exactly as fire. Arising from wood, burns the wood itself. Purport by Prabhupada. It is said that both the Jivatma, the individual soul, and the Paramatma live together within the heart. In the Vedic version, it is stated, Hridi Hiyayam Atma, the soul and the supersoul both live within the heart. The individual soul is liberated when it comes out of the material heart or cleanses the heart to make it spiritualized. The example given here is very appropriate. Yonim ivotito gnihi, agni or fire, comes out of wood, and by it the wood is completely destroyed. Similarly, when a living entity increases his attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is to be considered like fire. A blazing fire is visible by its exhibition of heat and light. Similarly, when the living entity within the heart becomes enlightened with full spiritual knowledge and detachment from the material world, he burns up his material covering of the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, and becomes free from the five kinds of material attachments, namely, ignorance, false egoism, attachment to the material world, envy, and absorption in material consciousness. Therefore, Panch Atmakam, as mentioned in this verse, refers either to the five elements or the five coverings of material contamination. When these are all burned into ashes by the blazing fire of knowledge and detachment, one is fixed firmly in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and advances one's attraction for Krishna by the spiritual master's instructions, the five coverings of the living entity cannot be uncovered from the material heart. The living entity is centered within the heart, and to take him away from the heart is to liberate him. This is the process. One must take a shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and by his instruction increase one's knowledge in devotional service. Become detached from the material world and thus become liberated. An advanced devotee therefore does not live within the material body but within his spiritual body, just as a dry coconut lives detached from the coconut husk even though within the husk. The pure devotee's body is therefore called Chinmaya Sharira, spiritualized body. In other words, a devotee's body is not connected with the material activities. And as such, a devotee is always liberated, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14.26. Srila Rupa Goswami also confirms this. Iha yasya harer dashye kamana manasar hira nikila shvapi avastasu jivan mukta sa uchyate. Whatever his condition may be, one who is engaged fully with his body, mind, and speech in the service of the Lord is liberated, even within this body. Mamcha yovi abhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityai tan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who is engaged in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita 14.26. So, this is the process. What is the process? One must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and by his instruction increase one's knowledge in devotional service, become detached from the material world, and thus become liberated. This is one of the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, more than one, but there are a number of subjects here, the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam. Annihilation is described here, and also salvation or liberation is described here, and summum bonum, the final goal of life, is described here. Srimad Bhagavatam is that special literature which deals with the purely transcendental subject of how to liberate the soul from its material bondage. And the liberated condition is especially being focused on here. What is the nature of a liberated person? This same question is asked by Arjuna to Krishna. How does a liberated person sit? How does he talk? How does he walk? What is the distinction between an ordinary conditioned soul and someone who is liberated? And here, that liberated condition is described as rati, attachment. Normally we hear that the system of Krishna consciousness is meant to teach detachment. In fact, when Hinduism is taught as an academic subject, we always hear that it is all about detachment. And yet here we find that the very word for bhava, or loving ecstasy, is rati. Rati is another word for bhava. It means attraction, attachment. Attachment for what? Because normally Hinduism is taught under the understanding of Shankara's monistic Vedanta, there is no question of attachment to anything. The Vedantists, the impersonal Vedantists, want to detach, neti, neti, to deny everything, this is not real because it has shape and form and qualities. This is not real. This is not real. What is real? Brahman. And we have one spark of that Brahman within us. And when that Brahman is liberated from this material encasement, then it merges with the Supreme Brahman and all differentiation is lost. Duality is finished. And because duality is the cause of pain and suffering, when duality is finished, we experience our natural blissful condition. And of course, we know that this is not our teaching. This is the teaching of Shankara. Here we have a very different understanding. Attachment. Attachment. That very thing that we are always told to get free from. Don't be attached, Prabhu. You know? You're too attached, Prabhu. But here, you know, too much attachment is being recommended. Be attached. But what should we be attached to? Rupa Goswami says, I wish that I had thousands of ears that I could hear the transcendental nectar of the pastimes of the Lord. And the statement is there that of Ananta Shesh, with his thousands of tongues, goes on describing the glories of the Lord, he cannot come to the limit of those glories. So what should we develop? Attachment. If one does not develop attraction and attachment for hearing the pastimes of the Lord, all of one's activities are simply a waste of time. You may be very expert in performing so many types of activities within your devotional life, but if the net result is that you do not develop some taste for hearing the transcendental glories of the Lord, something is wrong. What is that thing which is wrong? It is that you are cultivating weeds. You have a beautiful rose garden, very lovely rose, very fragrant rose. But side by side, you have allowed weeds to grow, and they are sucking the strength away until one day no rose is growing any longer. So if we do not find that we are developing a taste, the hearing about Krishna, for seeing the form of the Lord, for associating with the devotees of the Lord, if such taste is not developing, it is to be understood that we are cultivating weeds in the garden along with the devotional creeper. We have to be on guard. You have to heal yourself. You cannot expect that others will always attend to you. You have to constantly take stock, just like we heard in our management meeting, evaluation, right? We're supposed to evaluate. Managers, evaluate yourself. But similarly, devotees must evaluate themselves constantly. Am I becoming free from the hankerings, the pushings of the body, the vagams which push me, and the various types of attractions of this material world? If not, these are dangerous signs. So, our attraction is not a material attraction. Our attraction for Krishna is not something material. Prabhupada was sitting in the garden in Vrindavan, and he was speaking about how the impersonalists think. And he said that they hear about Mother Yasoda crying tears. Where is Krishna? The demon has stolen away Krishna. And when they hear this, they think, oh, what is this? Again, tears, crying, attachment of some sort. When Ramachandra Puri saw his guru, Madhavendra Puri, calling out for Krishna and crying in separation, he advised him, Prabhu, don't behave like this. This is not befitting one who has proper understanding. So, this is the danger, this is the problem with impersonalism. They cannot understand that the object of attachment for a devotee is not something material. Similarly, they cannot understand the activities of a devotee. They cannot understand them. They think a devotee is engaged in so many things, so many worldly activities, entangling. Therefore, the impersonalists prefer to remain on the platform of Gyan, knowledge, because they misunderstand that action causes entanglement. Material action causes entanglement, but spiritual action causes detachment. Detachment and knowledge and liberation. That thing which causes the disease, it can be the source of the cure, can be the cause of the cure. A milk product causes loose bowels, but another milk product tightens the bowels. Milk and yogurt act exactly opposite. One heats, the other cools. You get a thorn in your foot, it causes you pain. But that very same thorn, if you find its friend and use it, it can pull out the first thorn. So, engagement is not something that we should shy away from. Note, what it says here is the process. One must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and by his instruction, do what? Increase one's knowledge. Of what? Increase one's knowledge in devotional service. This is what the spiritual master is supposed to be teaching a disciple. Practically, how to engage in Krishna's service. Not theoretical knowledge. Theoretical knowledge, so many people have theoretical knowledge. You go to a university, very good theoretical knowledge, but no practical application of that knowledge. I can tell a hungry man, you see, I can say, you cook like this, you cook like this. But unless they apply that knowledge, their hunger will not be relieved. So what is the duty of a guru? The guru's duty is to teach the disciple how to practically engage in devotional service. Now, we find in this text that there is mention that the spirit soul is surrounded in five ways. The word here is pancha atmakam, five elements. Five elements are, you can say, like surrounding the soul. The soul is pure. The soul is a part and parcel of Krishna, pristine, wonderful in every way, but is surrounded by five types of elements or enemies, almost. Not necessarily, but five factors which are different at this point from the soul. That is the main point. The five things which surround the soul are not of the same nature. The soul is Sat, Chit, Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And these five are not. And Prabhupada gives us five ways of understanding what these things are. One sense, he gives the explanation of the material body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Definitely different. This is called dualism. Nowadays, popular philosophy is against dualism. And the dualism, you find dualism in the Greek philosophers. You find dualism through Descartes, or through the modern day, some beginning of modern philosophy. But nowadays, they don't like dualism anymore, which is why they have a problem, you see, apparent problem with us. But they don't, if we explain everything correctly. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is not just dualism, right? What do we teach? Yeah, we teach one and two. One and different simultaneously. We have both sides covered. And we can explain this very nicely. So here is a very interesting explanation. Very interesting explanation. This five elements, panchatmakam, very interesting. How the spiritual master will instruct the disciple to engage in devotional service. We are surrounded immediately by our body, but on a larger sense, we are surrounded by the whole world. And just as this body is made of these five elements, the whole world is made of these five elements. And just as the body has to be burned away, these five elements have to be burned away, so the whole world has to be burned away. If you only burn away this body, you may liberate yourself. You see. But then you cannot go out into the world. So if you want to simply try to burn away the five elements of earth, water, fire, air, and ether, which form your body, but not attend to the world outside, then you may be able to liberate yourself, but you can't step foot outside. So let us see what our spiritual master, that means our founder Acharya, because Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru, he's the founder, he's the Acharya for all of the persons, you know, of this age of Kali, coming from now to the end, when there will not be real human beings on this planet any longer. That's another favorite topic. But anyway, that's another topic, you know. But we're not speaking of doomsday now, but 10,000 years of devotion. What was his instruction in regard to this annihilation? What is the system? How do you annihilate these five elements? How do you do this? Because in the Bhagavatam, you'll find many explanations which sound very mystical, and they are mystical, because there's a process of mystic yoga by which you can annihilate one into the other, into the other, into the other. But that's not our business. We don't do this. That same process is accomplished by a different process in bhakti yoga. The same thing happens by a different method. What is that method? Each and every one of these things has to be offered in the fire of sacrifice. The burning process is the fire of sacrifice. And that fire of sacrifice is called Sankirtan Yajna. It's the Sankirtan Yajna. What is the Sankirtan Yajna? It is engaging the whole world in the service of Krishna. Everything. Practically everything. In the service of Krishna. It is very rare that we find something that cannot be engaged in Krishna's service. So, the process of getting free from the entanglement, the soul's entanglement, is that each and every item made of earth, water, fire, air, and sky, and combinations thereof, have to be offered in the service of Krishna. Now see how Prabhupada taught that. Srila Prabhupada demonstrated practically how to engage in a wide variety of activities. All the ashrams he established, Brahmachari and Brahmacharini ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, Sannyas ashram. He even made an attempt at Babaji ashram. I mean, he tried every ashram, right? Varnas, all kinds of engagements he gave, right? All kinds, from the temple services to, you know, massive types of preaching activities and big programs and businesses and buildings and so many different types of engagements. Because Prabhupada understood very clearly how to liberate the whole world. Prabhupada didn't just want to teach us how to liberate ourselves. He wanted to show that the whole world can become liberated. You can liberate this planet. He talked about that. He said, so what? There will be no loss if one planet goes back to Godhead. He said that. That's an indication of what our mission is. Prabhupada said, our mission is that this Krishna consciousness movement should go down in history for having saved the world. He didn't say for having saved yourself. He said for having saved the world. You save the world, you save yourself. You can always say if you save yourself, then you can save the world. But really, if you save the world, you save yourself. By saving the world, you save yourself. What are these five types of unwanted attachments which surround us? Material attachments, namely, ignorance. Ignorance means, what is the basic ignorance? A forgetfulness of our true identity. I am ignorant of who I am. Then who am I? Who am I? I can say I'm a spirit soul, that doesn't tell who I am. If you say, if someone asks in traditional Indian society, who are you? What do you answer? What is the traditional Indian way of answering who you are? Come on, Indians, speak up. Hey, here's an Indian. Huh? No. More clearly say, I am so-and-so. What comes after that? So-and-so. Come on, there's another. When you say, I am so, what is it? What is your name? How do you get a name in India? The first name, second name, tell me. Now tell me how it goes. What is the meaning? When someone says who you are, how do you identify yourself? Yeah, I am so-and-so, son of so-and-so. Is it not? Or daughter of so-and-so. You identify yourself by your father or by your mother, by your parents. Isn't it? So this is actually how we identify ourselves. I don't say, who are you? To say I'm spirit soul, so what? Every ant, every bug is a spirit soul. But if I say I am, you know, Tamal Krishna Goswami, son of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In Prabhupada's passport, you see Prabhupada's passport, what does it say? Father's name, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. That's how Prabhupada identified himself. So when we understand what is our identity, when it says here ignorance means to think of ourselves in any other way. False ego. The false ego assumes so many different shapes and forms that I'm so many other things other than the servant of my spiritual master. Attachment to the material world. As soon as you have these false egotistic conceptions, I'm the husband of so-and-so, I'm the wife of so-and-so, I'm the child of so-and-so, I'm a million other things, then what happens? And I'm not talking about Krishna conscious identities here, because those Krishna conscious identities are part of identifying correctly. When your family members are devotees, those types of identities are very real. They are as real as the relationship with Guru. They're not false, because they're Vaishnavas. Relationships with Vaishnava, Guru, Hari Guru Vaishnava. We worship Hari, we worship Guru, we worship Vaishnavas. We don't just worship Guru. This movement, when Buddha was establishing his Sangha, you know, he had, what is sacred? The Buddha is sacred. What is sacred? You know, the Sangha is sacred. The Sangha is sacred. And what is the Buddha's teachings is sacred. Very similar. All you study the religion, you'll see. The Sangha, we say the same thing. What did Prabhupada say? The Sangha is my body. ISKCON is my body. When people say, Prabhupada told me, he said, I never feel myself separated from my Guru Maharaj. I never feel as if my Guru Maharaj is away from me. But what did he mean? How do we keep Prabhupada with us all the time? Vapu and Vani. Now you can say the Vapu is not present always, but the Vani is. But, you know, as you'll see, I wrote a Vyas Puja offering when it comes out. I don't want to preempt it, but I'll give you a hint. That I said that I think that Prabhupada, you know, went one better on his own statement. That even though he said that Vani is always there and Vapu is not, he did say that ISKCON is my body. And that's Vapu. So anyone who serves ISKCON continues to have Vapu Seva of Prabhupada. They continue to do the worship of Prabhupada's body. And Prabhupada told us this for very, very good reason. Because he knew how attached we were to him. He knew how dear he was to all of us. So he identified himself with this movement. So that we would take this movement as our life and soul. So that anything that happened to this movement would personally, we would feel as if it was personally affecting Prabhupada. And it did personally affect Prabhupada. Anyone who was with Prabhupada saw that if something was wrong, Prabhupada would be, with the movement, he would become personally very concerned. When there was a threat to our movement in 1970, you see, when there was some threat from outside influence, from India, from the Gaudiya Math, through some of the senior members of our society. Prabhupada in Los Angeles developed heart palpitations. When the movement was threatened, his heart began to fail. That proves that this movement was his body. The only thing that could pacify Prabhupada was reading Krishna book. We'd sit there and we would read Krishna book. And after 20, 30 minutes, whoever was massaging Prabhupada's heart, the palpitation, they would feel the palpitation would go. And the only thing that could relieve him was he would hear Krishna's lila. But, you know, what does that mean also? That means that the situation of this world became so painful that the only way he could get relief was to think of Krishna and Krishna Loka. And we should not give palpitations to Prabhupada's heart. It is a matter of grave concern. Unless you think that Prabhupada is not physically present. But I believe that Prabhupada is present in this movement. If I doubted that, then I would be forlorn. I think I would be forlorn. I would be heartbroken and hopeless. So, attachment to the material world comes when you develop so many false identities other than I'm the servant of my guru, and you think you're the servant of so many other things, and then you become attached to those things. Because the beauty of attachment to guru is it allows you to deal with the world without feeling attachment for it. When you love guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas, then you can act within this world as a servant, not as the enjoyer. Just like I think we should all feel this way, but we cannot stand, we should want that the service be offered to our guru. Sometimes people, you know, because I'm in the position of a guru, they try to offer me a garland, or they try to offer me some foodstuffs, and I become very uncomfortable if it is not first offered to Prabhupada. Because I just feel like he's the person that should be served, and I want his remnants. Uddhava, who is the minister of Krishna, is so much attached to Krishna that he will not wear any clothing that Krishna has not worn. He will not eat any food that is not off of Krishna's plate. That's why of all the Yadavas, Uddhava is considered to be the best. He's in such a special position because he lives on the mercy of Krishna. So a disciple should live on the mercy of the guru. So much attached. Just like anyone who was serving Prabhupada, so many servants now, Shruti Kirti Prabhu comes out with his diary. You know, you can't imagine that someone would give the servant something and then that they would enjoy without Prabhupada enjoying. Everything belonged to Prabhupada in the servant's mood. Now we are in that position, that we should think ourselves like that. That we live by the remnants, by the mercy of our guru. And if our guru forgets to call us to take prasanna, we fast. False egotism, attachment to the material world, envy. And what is envy? I don't have enough. Now I'm attached to all the material things, and I see things that others have, and I become envious. And finally, absorption in material, then the consciousness becomes fallen. As the Bhagavad Gita describes, jayaya tovi shayan punsa sangas teshu sanjayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha bijayate. Then the next thing develops, right? From krodha, from anger, comes bewilderment, loss of memory, and one falls down again into the material whirlpool. One's consciousness is gone out of the body. So how do all of these things become burned up? Everything depends on this one point. Prabhupada said, here is the process. You should become engaged. One must take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and by his instruction increase one's knowledge in devotional service. Become detached from the material world and thus become liberated. Prabhupada has given us this process. He has given us the Sankirtan movement. That is the primary process for deliverance in this age. this whole Sankirtan movement. The chanting is part of it. Everything that we do with deity worship is part of it. But really, it is the Sankirtan movement. We are Sankirtan devotees. We are engaged in Sankirtan personally, and we preach Sankirtan, and we allow ourselves to become part of the preaching mission. So the whole process of engagement and devotional life, this will liberate us. Not that we simply sit, you know, and hear Krishna Katha. That may be possible for some very elevated soul. When did Prabhupada take up that process? He never took it up, practically, until the end. And if he did, it was talking to himself. In the last moments of his life, he stopped preaching. The last moments, and even then I can't say stop, because he told Yadavar, film it. Film me passing from my body. He showed us by his personal example. Sometimes it may be argued, well, Prabhupada didn't have to do what we have to do because he was a liberated soul. Well, but Prabhupada had to set the example. Prabhupada did teach by his example. So to argue that Prabhupada didn't have to do what we had to do, so we have to sit all day and do certain, you know, we'll chant all day until we get to Prabhupada's stage, and then we can also engage in the preaching mission. I don't believe that. I don't think it's possible. And if it were possible, then Prabhupada would have shown that example. So, this very practical. The examples are many within our movement. People like Gauri Dasi, great Sankirtan devotee, engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness under Prabhupada's guidance, you know. And at the final moments of her life, when she was in Vrindavan, she told the devotees, take a picture of me. Just like Prabhupada said, take a picture of me so I can send it back to the girls in Los Angeles and they can see, you know, that I'm okay in the final moments of my life, that I'm happy. And when she was leaving her body, she said, it's so incredible, it's so incredible. She was describing what she was saying. She said, it's so incredible. So I think that we should understand what is our mission. Our mission is to liberate the whole world. Our mission is to give our life for liberating the whole world. You can't liberate the whole world if you become fallen. Therefore, you perform sadhana bhakti so that you are in a fit condition to fight. Prabhupada said, what is Prabhupada's identity? I want to die like a soldier in the battlefield, he said. He told us what his identity. I'm a preacher. I left Vrindavan to go and preach, to save the world. And when I die, he said, I want to die in the battlefield like a soldier. When we were going to take him to America, he said, never mind. If I die in New York, you can bury me on the roof. Because there's no, you know, he said, it's just cement and asphalt. There's no ground. Bury me up on the roof. But I want to die in the battlefield. And therefore, he had no reason to pick up the dictaphone and start dictating in the last moments of his life. What was he doing dictating? Was it that there was something so essential in those last verses he dictated? No, he wanted to demonstrate. He wanted to demonstrate, first of all, I'm a perfect consciousness. I'm not feeble. I'm not senile. I'm in perfect consciousness. And you read those purports. They're the most spectacular purports. Nobody was reading him all day. Simply read him the verse and he was going on and on perfectly. It's just unbelievable. And he wanted to show, till the end, I'm doing my duty. I'm preaching Krishna consciousness. No retirement. When I joined Prabhupada at the end to be his secretary, I thought, I read about it. As soon as I read the Chaitanya Chaitamrita came out, and it said that when the spiritual master gets older and he gets ready to retire, some disciples will go with him and assist him. I was in total anxiety at the time because I had left India and gone to America. And I thought, God, how am I going to be with Prabhupada? So in 1976, I just thought, I'm going to be with Prabhupada now for the rest of his time. I just feel like I have to be with him. Whatever he does and I can help him with, okay. I was just meditating like that. But he never retired. He didn't retire. That was what surprised me. He didn't retire. He never retired. He wrote that that's what you're supposed to do. He said, the spiritual master will withdraw. But he only withdrew in the last few hours. People kept coming, and Prabhupada kept saying, preaching to them, one by one, all the senior devotees, this is your mission, this is your mission, this is your mission. Everyone, encouraging everyone who came. And only the last few minutes, then he just withdrew. So, you know, we should know what is the purpose of our prayers. What should be the purpose of our prayers? What should be the purpose of our japa? What should be the purpose of our life? Our business is to save the world. If you save the world, you save yourself. You know, and if you only save yourself and the rest of the world goes to hell, is that the way to be dear to Prabhupada? Is that the way to show selfless devotion? Prabhupada didn't show that example. He left Vrindavan and came to save us. He took so much trouble for us. So if we don't take trouble for each other and for the saving the world, we're not Prabhupada's followers. I'll stop here if anyone has any questions. That being Krishna Prabhu. I think each GBC man will define ISKCON slightly differently. And I think that there are many ways to describe it. I can only answer from my personal view that I would like to think of the whole world as ISKCON. But that's just my personal view sitting here today. There are other times when I say, you're not in ISKCON, this is the line, this is ISKCON, and this is not ISKCON. We're ISKCON, and you're not. So sometimes I speak like that, and today I'm being very generous and saying, people, that's why people say that this man doesn't, you know, he says he always changes his mind. Because there are so many ways to see things. So it's a question of, you know, I think time and place determines, you know, when we're getting attacked by someone or when someone is coming very, you know, close and pulling people away, we say, you're not ISKCON. You're not ISKCON for the following reasons. This is ISKCON. And I'll be just as loud as anybody else in saying that. Then at other times, I feel that, you know, because we do say that so much, we limit ourselves so greatly. And I think that the point is that Prabhupada was very generous. I mean, you see how Prabhupada dealt with perfect strangers. He dealt with them in such friendly, personal ways that you'd have to think that he was saying, hey, welcome to ISKCON. I don't think he wanted to exclude anyone. So, in one level, you can say that the whole world can be ISKCON. So that's the great. You can be very reduced in terms of the limitations, the temples, the legal entity, the GBC, the temple presence, anyone who lives in the temple, or anyone who strictly follows by chanting 16 rounds, follows the four regular principles, and believes in the GBC. And you know, you got to believe in the Pope if you're a Catholic. According to the Catholic Church, you have to believe in the Pope. Many Catholics don't believe in the Pope anymore, but they still say they're Catholic. So this is not our problem. One thing I've learned now by studying, you know, in the university, is that there is nothing that we have that we deal with that is not being dealt with by every other religion. It's from beginning to end. They go through all the same stuff on philosophy. They go through the same organizational problems and questions. And not just now, their history is like that. Shankarshan Prabhu. Very good. Series of loving relationships emanating from... I mean, frankly, we'll get as many definitions of ISKCON as there are people in this room. And I'm certain that there's some substance to each one of them. We have to, for legal purposes, identify ISKCON. we will do so, you know, in a constitution, for example. As a GBC, to deal with issues, we have to identify ISKCON in a certain way. There's no alternative. It's sometimes painful, because we would like to be able to perhaps be more inclusive, but sometimes it's not possible. I mean, Prabhupada was ferocious in protecting ISKCON. And he made clear distinctions. That across the river is not ISKCON. Don't go there. You know, he drew the line. The Ganges drew the line. So, I mean, he was very clear. At other times, you know, he was very liberal. I think we have to have both natures. And, of course, intelligence is when to know which nature to apply it. That's also there. When we become confused, problems develop. Yes, Krishna.
Sometimes when we ask, is it better to go away and take Prabhupada's books and go alone, or have temporary friction between each other?
Experience tells that sometimes one way is better and sometimes the other. Sometimes it's better for a very disturbed individual to go at a distance in order to cool down or to avoid further offenses or further friction. At other times, it's better to work through the problem. I mean, the question is a good one, and the situations are diverse enough that no one answer can work. I have told certain people, don't work in ISKCON, don't live in ISKCON, because I knew that they could not get along with people. And they would simply create offenses and worsen their situation. At other times, I've told them, you're trying to avoid a problem, and you can't avoid it, it'll follow you. You have to stay here and work through it. We need experienced people to advise on which situation is applicable in which circumstance. So you need, that's why elders are very good. Elders are very good. You know, we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Even if our elders have made mistakes, even if our elders have disappointed us, we still need elders. You know, I mean, we need elders because they have so much experience. But we can be cautious in accepting advice from elders at the same time because elders have sometimes made mistakes.
I've only heard of one instance of that. Someone who was supposed to be terminally ill, but then it failed. It was better. But
very interesting case.
Prabhupada mentions Bhaktivinoda Thakur as the exemplary householder. As I understand, he never took sannyas. During his final years, he just took Babaji. So in ISKCON, most of the householders have this idea that eventually I'm supposed to take sannyas.
Yeah. I think that as far as you want to hear about that, or you have a question, I should cut you off, right?
I think my question would be, since in Kali,
I don't think most. The way a householder should take sannyas, if by nature they're very brahminical, a sannyas is no good if you're not brahminical. I mean, I'll speak very personally. I shouldn't do this, but I have so many disciples. Still, I'll speak personally. That my nature is definitely a mixed nature. But I took sannyas because I was very devoted and I wanted to serve Prabhupada. But my nature is not so entirely brahminical. So it's very difficult to be a sannyasi. But because I took this vow, I try to keep this vow. I keep my word to Prabhupada. But a person whose nature is very brahminical, such a person should take sannyas and can take it and follow it easily. So householders should see if their natures are really brahminical. These people have an easier time at sannyas. Otherwise, if there's a lot of passion and you take sannyas, it can be very difficult and in many cases impossible, as we have seen. So I do not think that all householders have to take sannyas. Many householders can be vanaprasthas. And vanaprastha stage for our movement is going to probably be turn out to be perhaps the most valuable ashram of all. As far as I can make out, the vanaprastha ashram will become the most valuable because The vanaprasthas are teachers and preachers. They have no more family responsibility. They're husband and wife. Very attractive. Husband and wife combination, very attractive. But no more obligation to family. Simply preaching. The husband has got his wife to protect him, but still not engaged any longer in family affairs. So he will not be subjected to attraction to the opposite sex because he has his wife there to protect him. They can preach as a team very effectively. They have years and years of experience. So it's a very valuable stage. Some should take sannyas. Some persons can take sannyas and be very bold and wonderful preachers. Sannyas has been good for me. I don't regret having taken it. I only say that it's not an easy thing to do. Because with the passion I have just tried to use it in the preaching mission. But a sannyasi should be dispassionate. But I'm passionate. It's like I tell Ridayananda Maharaj, you know, I just want to compete. A sannyasi should, but I want to compete. And I will compete. I will compete. That's just the way it is. I want to come out first. A sannyasi shouldn't think that way, but I'll use it for Krishna. Prabhupada said this about me. He taught, one person said, you know, why is he's always competing like this? And Prabhupada said, yes. He told us to Adikesh in Vrindavan. He said, yes, he wants to compete, but he wants to do it for Krishna. Well, he said, why does he always want to control? He said, yes, he wants to control, but he wants to control for Krishna. So here's a case of a mixed modes. Mixed modes, but I'm trying to be true to the vow I took. But it's not easy. And you get, the results you get are also not easy. But that's honest at least. At least it doesn't create absolute chaos, which is created when someone leaves their vow. Then it's really devastation. This way it's just some hard knocks occasionally. And good also. So I'm not in favor of all householders taking sannyas. I think many householders should be satisfied with vanaprastha ashram. And some special persons who are really knowledgeable and very detached and whose wives or family are well situated, let them take sannyas at the proper time. Then we'll be spared so much problem. Sannyasis falling down are a very big problem. It is a very, very big problem. And Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram is a very secure ashram. Any final questions? Okay, one Mataji, yes. Prabhuvi. Right, Prabhuvi?
It's hard to keep up, you know.
And you know, what is sannyas today? Because as a guru, you have a big family. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, I gave up one wife, and now I got so many children. It's and I have so many children now. So many daughters, you have to worry, how are they going to get married? How are they going to be protected? I mean, practically, it's just such an awkward position now to be a sannyasi and a guru. And if you're not affectionate and loving, how will people remain Krishna conscious? So I tell you, it's not easy. When I say to be a sannyasi is not an easy thing, because we have, you know, married together sannyas and guru. And guru means you have so many disciples. And you cannot reject the girls. Now you can try and place them under the care of others, but some affection has to be given. Prabhupada was affectionate to his daughters. But he was 70-something years old. And the girls were 20. They were granddaughters. Prabhupada told me. He said, he noticed one of the devotees was in the kitchen. One of the men was in the kitchen. He was a householder and there was another lady in the kitchen. Prabhupada said, where is so-and-so? And I said, in the kitchen. He said, where is so-and-so? I said, in the kitchen. He said, they're in the kitchen together? I said, yes. And Prabhupada looked at me and then he said, I am an old man. I am beyond these things now. But you are all young men. You can be affected. Be very careful. So, You just all have to, we have to pray for each other and protect each other, I say. But it's very hard not to be caring for your disciples. At least I find it very hard not to be affectionate to them. If you don't give protection to the girls, then they will go wrong. So they have to be protected. And protection means affection. That's what protection. Protection just doesn't mean walls. Protection doesn't mean a gun. Protection means affection. How did Prabhupada protect us? He bound us by love. That's the protection. When someone loves you and you love them, nothing will get in the way. So, we need vanaprasthas. Because then the vanaprasthas will look after the girls nicely. The vanaprasthas are really going to be a help to our movement. Yes, Prabhu, daughter, whatever you are, speak. Say that again. Yes. Dr. Dingra, Hare Krishna. Nice to see you. In other ages, they were not Krishna conscious always either. Dr. Dingra is our neighbor. He is our well-wisher. He is an interesting person because on the top he is in saffron and on the bottom he is in white. So he is one of these persons who, as I said, he is able to make it in all the ashramas. And he's a doctor. He's the only doctor I have ever met in the world that treats his patients with a shaved head and a sika. He gives prasadam to them as well as medicine. And his family are all Krishna conscious. Mother is a good devotee. His sister is a devotee. His nieces are devotees. He lives in that. He's very attached to the color saffron. He painted his house saffron. The house that Naveen Krishna Prabhu is staying in, just across, is Dr. Dingra's house. He actually is the person who assured me that we could take up this project. He told me that this project will never suffer for shortage of funds. He told me, he said, if ever you need a loan, you come to me, and I will make sure that the work will not stop. So he has a very busy time. He would spend more time with us, but he has a full-time clinic that he runs. He has other businesses. He cares for his mother also, and he does his own sadhana. And otherwise, he's fully engaged. But we are very happy that you are living next to Hare Krishna Dham. And I pray that the mercy of the Dham is overflowing onto your house. I pray like that. And I know you're looking after Naveen Krishna Prabhu. Huh? Naveen is staying with you? So take good advantage of his association. He helped me very much, Naveen Krishna Prabhu. As you have helped me, he also has. He came to my zone and he gave me so much good advice. Without his advice, I could not have changed this zone as I did. So he's a very good guest to have. You have a sadhu in your house. Even though he's in white clothes, don't be deceived. Hare Krishna. So, anyway, I think the point is, your question is about past ages. We have to end now. I think we need to end because it's past nine. And I'll answer your question on another day. You ask the question again and we'll answer. So please excuse my own shortcomings and please pray for me when I go out and preach because it's very risky. Prabhupada told me I could enter into fire and not get burned. But it's very hot in there. It may not be burning, but it's hot. So please give me your mercy. Hare Krishna.